Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY, done with you training, and done for you SEO options. So there is truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist and use the code Modern Therapist for a DIY course or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your consult for special offers.
Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thryser is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thryser.com/modern therapist, and use the code Modern Therapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thryser.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and today we wanted to delve into the world of dual relationships and some of the conflicting ethical codes that surround it. I know that I hear a lot of questions and concerns as we move forward into the 21st century of how dual relationships come up and what it means as far as social media, what it means as far as a presence, and even how it fits within many of the things that Katie and I talk about as far as developing a personal brand. And this is definitely an area that is rife with confusion, that the major organizations who have ethical codes surrounding this don't necessarily agree on it. I think that there's some huge generational gaps in understanding what these things are, and a changing world that doesn't really stay up to date as far as how fast ethical codes can be developed and applied and interpreted with the way that technology and especially things like social media really come up.
I think it's something that we have to look at again, primarily because it's more and more like we're in a small community. And I think so in some ways there's a pendulum swing going back to the way that therapists, psychologists, folks who were doing therapy were interacting in their communities, because you know people online and you know people, there's the ability to have a lot more information about people and there's a lot more public knowledge, which in small communities is kind of what they've already been dealing with. But now everyone's in a small community because social media brings so many people together. And so I think we're actually kind of returning to some of the stuff that people had to navigate. But the big difference is that we don't have to be a blank slate, and we actually do have to market in order to get clients into our offices. And so we have to put more information out because we've got more informed consumers.
As we talk about the generational gap that's happening, and especially as clinicians who are really finishing up school now or very early on in their careers that have had a lifetime of social media potentially available to them, that your internet history can and will follow you around. That if yep. there's a MySpace that's out there from several years ago, or your early Facebook hasn't been cultivated, it's not like you're necessarily entering into this profession as having a lifetime of choosing what you've put out there, or even having your parents or somebody else put out about you as you're growing up. So there's an identity that can be searched for online that clients can find out, does provide a lot of opportunities for potential clients or people who want to find information about you to find that information about you. So this is not necessarily an ethical decision of where you're at right this second going forward, but this is potentially stuff that people can already see about you, what your thoughts were, what you ate for lunch 7 years ago.
Yeah, there's so much out there. I think it's hard because especially when social media was first coming out, I don't think that people really had a sense of what it meant. It was just a really cool way for people to connect and share their lives. And what you're talking about is therapists now, some of those newer therapists may have not had any idea that they were going to be a therapist when social media started. I mean, you know, I'm the old one over here, and I was a therapist when I joined Facebook, you know, for the first time. So it was something where I had the opportunity to think about what I wanted to curate. You know, I didn't necessarily do it right away because I think we didn't have a sense of it, but some of these therapists, you're right, like they're completely, their whole lives are online.
And this is also where we look at that a lot of the clients who are going to be seeking us out, especially going forward, their lives are online too. And I think that there has been a huge hesitation of ethicists in the field looking at what the interaction is between a client's online world and what our online world is. And so some of the questions that really come up is about creating a online persona that may or may not be professional. And I'm looking at a question posted to Reddit by user BlacksideKnight3, who's asking, can a therapist also be a YouTuber who makes videos expressing personal opinions on topics, including non-therapy things? And the discussion around this, you can kind of tell based on who's responding to it, is either very, very young clinicians or probably older clinicians that have really drastically different views on this. And some of them are citing ethics codes. And I think that really in a couple of situations, NASW's current ethical code that's out there and the ACA's code that's out there really go so far as to spelling out things about social media. Things like social workers should avoid communication with clients using technologies such as social networking sites, online chat, email, text messages for personal or non-work related purposes. And my hesitation around this is that you can create a Facebook business page. You can create an Instagram surrounding your business, even if it's posting personal quotes, if it's being shared by your clients. This isn't necessarily breaking their confidentiality in any certain way. It's the potential to even just say thanks for a comment in a chain of, if you're thanking people that you know are not your clients, that excluding them might be just as bad as just saying thanks. And so I don't think that there's necessarily a black or white line as far as how to interact with people online that's any different than what you bring up as far as the small communities of the past.
Yeah, I think it's something where the initial response, you know, if you, even in the ethics code you just read, I mean, it's really caution. But there is the caveat in a non-work setting. And I think that's the piece where I feel very comfortable in my online presence because it is a business interaction. You know, I think that there's a lot of hard lines that people draw. There's some people they won't friend on Facebook. And I tend to agree. I'm not going to friend a client on Facebook just because I think there is a confusion there. But how do you make that decision? Certainly Instagram, people can follow you without you really letting them. But LinkedIn, I'm linked with my therapist, you know? And so I think it's that piece of, it's something where it's a completely business piece. Where do we draw the line? You know, because there's things that we're going to post that are going to be our personal stuff. And I think that we shouldn't interact with our clients there. But if we're interacting around business, isn't that completely what the code is saying?
And the way that people interpret this is that it confuses the boundaries between what the therapeutic relationship is and what a personal relationship might be. Mm-hmm. And I think that in talking about you with your therapist, I kick around quite a bit with you, hang around with you, know that you really do try to uphold a lot of ethics. And even in some of the stories that you've shared with me about your work with your therapist, that I don't think that it's ever really come into any sort of questionable way as far as you're picking up on.
No.
And I think that what this means is that it's possible and that the examples that are ever going to violate these ethics codes are probably going to be the most egregious ones. But when we go back to talking about even like the content of the episode that we had about our take on texts, there are people out there who are interpreting these codes as being, you can't even text clients in a world where text therapy exists.
Yeah.
And so there's some huge gaps in our understanding of this. And what I think is that ultimately there probably is a good way to be respectful and to not violate people's confidentiality and to not really blur into what that therapeutic relationship might be. But as our populations of clientele grow and mature and have an even ever-present existing social media presence, that this is going to continue to be an issue that's faced, and it's going to be something where rather than outright banning it, we really need to have healthy discussions around how to do it correctly.
I think that having a conversation on how to do it rather than just saying don't do it is really important. I mean, I think when we look at, well, just don't text your clients or don't have an online presence, it's kind of, maybe this is a little dramatic to say, but it's kind of like burning books. I mean, it's like people are going to read, people are going to learn. You know, technology is moving forward. How we interact with our clients is moving forward, and thinking really thoughtfully about how to do it, I think, is important.
Simplified SEO Consulting's team of mental health professionals genuinely want to help you attract more of your ideal clients with a proven on-page SEO process using the strategies that are most effective for therapist websites. They know SEO is an investment, which is why it is so important to find someone who aligns with your values and understands the importance of building your private practice in a meaningful way. Simplified SEO Consulting hopes to be that team for you and your practice.
The expert team would love to talk with you during a free consultation to figure out the best fit for your SEO journey. Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY, done with you training, and done for you SEO options. So there's truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Be sure to ask if their innovative content network is a good fit for your website. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off a DIY SEO course with code MODERNTHERAPIST or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off your done-for-you SEO program onboarding this spring.
Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist.
In a recent conversation, I talked about how I talked about how you really learn how to navigate relationships in a more social setting while still remaining professional if you work in more of a milieu setting. So like a date treatment or a rehab where you're interacting with clients all day long. You can't be the perfect therapist 24/7, you know, and I actually worked in a place where we went camping with the clients. You know, we didn't stay in the same tents, we didn't do those things, but it was a treatment facility where when we went on outings, we were interacting with clients. And so being able to identify that persona and having a relationship with clients from that professional boundary place, I think is actually a really good mechanism to understand how we can do that online, because we can share a lot about ourselves, the curated personal as well as the professional, and I think have a really nice boundaried relationship that may or may not, you know, fall into quote unquote dual relationship. And you always say, and I agree, not all dual relationships are bad. Some of them are required.
In fact, I have that ethics code from the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists pulled up right this second, ready to jump in.
Ready to go.
And that's basically what it says. Katie already hit it. So,
but I think that's important to really understand is that therapists in super small communities, and we have we talked to one, a sex therapist in a small town. They are already dealing with this. They're figuring out how to interact in their community on a day-to-day basis, where they have to live their life around their clients. And so, I think it's something where taking a page from that book, when we do that online, when we really curate the personal parts to really think about how do the personal life parts could affect clients, could affect professional interactions. And I think this is something that probably all people should be doing, because everything online stays forever. And so if you're looking for a job, you also want to be cautious about what you have online, regardless of the profession. But I think if you're able to curate the personal parts and then also talk about the professional persona, I think that can be super helpful, because when you interact from that place, yes, they have a relationship outside of the room with you, but it's a thoughtful one, and it's one that potentially deepens the relationship versus harms the relationship.
This is really where I think that some of the concerns are around expressing some of your personal views that might get conflated with your professional position. This is not a ethics idea that exists completely in a vacuum, that there is examples, and they've turned into legal examples, of things like the Julia Ward case against the Western Michigan University, where she was refusing to work with clients who presented with wanting to work on homosexual relationships. there are other ethics codes that say don't discriminate. There are protected classes. Your personal views have been found in a couple of different court cases around your First Amendment rights to speak don't allow you to discriminate in a professional setting. And that's really a limitation that I'm not saying go to the extreme end of this. There's positions where we can use our professional backgrounds to form our opinions, and people might not necessarily like that. I'm thinking of Jordan Peterson, the Canadian psychologist who's a very right-wing darling right now with a lot of his views on anti-PC and anti-fascism and this kind of stuff. Those are, you know, the big examples of this. But if you're leaving a somewhat thoughtful but critical Yelp review on a restaurant where you had a bad experience, I'm kind of fine with that, even if a client stumbles upon that. If somebody wants to know that my spaghetti was cold when I was eating at a restaurant, and they have only had good experiences there, you know, I might not make that decision to always make those Yelp reviews, but if I do, this is really kind of inconsequential in the greater things. And our friend Ben Caldwell has kind of helped shape some of my ideas on this, in that he talks about we don't have this all-present power over clients in every aspect of their lives. And especially if we can demonstrate an understanding of clients' viewpoint and a reflection of being able to respect differences, we're kind of modeling for them some good, healthy interpersonal interactions in the first place.
Personally, I would refrain from doing the Yelp review in a way that's visible. You know, I would have my personal account that had less... I just think on a personal branding side, I don't think it necessarily lines up for me. And so if I wanted to do a lot of Yelp reviews, I would create more of an account that was a little bit more anonymous, that potentially different email address, not a picture that's me, not a name that necessarily lines up, so that I wouldn't have clients stumble upon it. Because I think that it can, I think, interact with in the room. I know for myself, I did the client thing and I found my therapist on Facebook. And I saw some personal views that actually impacted me a little bit. There was some religious ideas that she had that didn't line up with mine. And not that I judge her for it, not that I think she would judge me for it, but there's pieces of things that I don't share as much because I know that about her. And so I think there is more caution that I would put where I don't want necessarily clients to know about my personal opinions about restaurants, for example, because that's not relevant to them. And it, you know, it gives them a little bit more information on me that I don't feel like is in line with my personal brand or would be helpful in a therapeutic room. But stepping back to kind of the political views or views about current events, I think that's something where this also goes to who your client is, because I know for me, a lot of my clients have had some sort of sexual trauma, and there was a moment in time where there was something that came up in the public discourse where I felt like if I did not comment on it in a public way, that would hurt my clients. And you know, I may make a different decision each time something like that happens, but I think that could offend or push against other people who could potentially be prospective clients. I think it does help me to have the clients who are mine come in, and it gives a more specific thing. But I think, I don't know if that's exactly dual relationship, but certainly when I make statements about current events, that's going to be something where I think about it in relation to who my clients are and either what they expect from me or if they could be hurt if I don't say something. Does that make sense?
It does. And when it comes to especially big topic things that happen as far as special events, and I think that really my intention coming into this episode was having a personality and a persona outside of sessions, but inside of sessions, we can make a lot more of these statements or pick and choose what we say on a case-by-case basis in a way that's a lot more controlled. I know for me, some of the most difficult days that I've ever had in the office as far as client material that's brought up was the day of the Sandy Hook shooting and the day after the 2016 election. These were client reactions to events that were going on. But I think when we talk about personalities and ideas outside of sessions, of creating a YouTube channel, or even being a little self-referential here, of having a podcast, of being able to express views that might challenge the status quo, might challenge things. But again, being self-referential here is that Katie and I have created content around professional stuff. And even though you're going to see some of our personalities, some of my awful dad jokes, that it gives you a sense of who we are, and it gives you a sense of what a relationship with us is like. But this is still fairly curated. This is still something where we have an opportunity that, as we talk and as off the cuff as we can be, we still have an opportunity to edit that out. And I think that that's really what we need to ascribe to when we are putting our personal or our professional views out there in ways that are a relationship with the public. And I think that there are some solid ethics codes of what we need to consider in doing that. But I hate the idea that we have to shy away from having personal opinions because we are a professional. And that it's really important to clarify that these are views of our own, that we don't speak for other people. And that's something that we, again, referencing ourselves in this process here, is that we do try to make clear these are our ideas, that this is us speaking for us, not necessarily as therapists in general, not necessarily as marriage and family therapists or any of the other organizations that we speak to. Generally, I think that we're pretty non-controversial in what we say, but it's still a way of creating content and helping to build a brand. And if any of you were to ever end up in one of our offices as a client, that's something that would probably need to be navigated, but hopefully done in a healthy way.
Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate upfront. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thrizer.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
I want to talk about the distinction you made between who we are in our office with our clients versus who we are outside, because I think that there's a few different layers. Certainly in my office, my clients have more of a sense, depending on if it's helpful for them and their treatment individually, about my personal views. Some of my clients, specifically, I've talked about the fact that I'm in therapy. Others, I've not necessarily mentioned it, but if they listen to the podcast, they would know. Oftentimes, there are things that in session, I can talk more freely, especially if there's, whether it's similar viewpoints that help the client feel more comfortable to dig deeper into something, or opposing viewpoints. But when I'm talking about making statements about current events, I've actually done that as a professional on my social media. I know in particular, one piece that I put out was during the Me Too movement. And I did put a post about that I could say Me Too. I didn't put any more specifics than that, but I also talked about some of my concerns about the Me Too movement, about it being triggering to some of the folks who may not be ready to disclose. I talked about some of the ins and outs, and it was from a professional place, but I did disclose that I could also do hashtag Me Too. And so I think it's something where being able to identify, because I work with people who have had sexual trauma, because I work primarily with women who oftentimes have some sort of discrimination or harassment that they've experienced, that I felt like I couldn't remain silent during that time. And I put it from a professional perspective and put it out in the world. And so I think it's something where navigating that, I took a few days. I had to think about it. I had to decide what I wanted to put out there. But I think that there are ways that we can end up having a little bit more of ourselves out there, and people potentially who saw that and wouldn't necessarily want to work with me because I put something out about me too. There is a self-selection process there, and it's something where theoretically I didn't have this happen, but you know, I could have had current clients that had a response to that. And I think it's rich clinical material, but it also can be something where I'm bringing more of myself in the room. And I think it is something to think about and not take lightly.
And I uphold that this is good. This is good stuff to have out there, because if that helps make a consumer more likely to not choose you because of not sharing your beliefs and not feeling that that's a thing that they feel would be respected in the room, I think it's better for them to find that out before they're invested 5 or 6 sessions into a relationship with you. It's incredibly difficult for people to change therapists. It's something where it could potentially turn them off from the field altogether. And especially for people who don't have the time or the money or the resources or clinical presenting problem that allows them to shop around for 5 or 6 first sessions with different therapists before making a choice, that this ultimately benefits them.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the flip side of that is that if they agree really strongly with you, it might create an expectation of a certain outcome, that you're going to be the same way in session that you are crafted online or speaking online about certain topics or even an audience. But where I really struggle with the people who interpret that there's absolutely no space in a social media world to have even a passing interaction with clients is that many of us have given public presentations before. Many of us have existed before the world of the internet and been able to speak or vote or sign a petition in a grocery parking lot that does indicate some sort of a personal difference.
I think that's really important to even expand on, because I think when we've interacted with clients in the past, outside, because, you know, hey, we go to the same gym or they end up in that grocery parking lot with us, it always comes back to discussing it in the room and having it be part of the clinical conversation. Saying that we can't do it is unrealistic. It's unrealistic that nothing of us would ever be found out by our clients. It's not possible anymore, except maybe some of the old school therapists who have somehow refrained from having a digital footprint. Our clients are going to find things out about us, whether we want them to or not. They may see us if we live in the same community where we work, whether we want them to or not. And I think the big piece about this is it's part of the discussion in the treatment room. You know, I mentioned earlier that my therapist, you know, has a different religious perspective than I do. And I brought it up. And we had a conversation about it. We talked about this podcast, about whether she was going to listen or not, and we discussed it. I think that's the piece that I really take home. And I think what's been really beautiful for me and my therapist is that we are in the same community. And so we are constantly navigating dual relationships because I'm actively involved, she's actively involved. How are we going to navigate through this? And so really seeing kind of the extreme of how dual relationships that are not harmful can be navigated has been really helpful to me, because it makes it very freeing for me to be able to say, okay, I'm not going to actively go out and do, you know, create dual relationships with my clients, but I can be free to be who I am, being conscious about what personal things I want to curate and what my professional persona is. But the rich conversations that you can have with clients in the room can lead to a whole bunch of stuff that really actually improves the therapeutic outcome. So I think for me, whether it's online or you run into a client at the gym when you're changing, like whatever it can be, like it comes back to we have to have these conversations in the room, because that's how we can really navigate this thing through.
One curious point is Ofer Zur, who's a great ethicist. He's based up in Northern California. He's written for years on different ethical and legal issues. He actually has a social media policy as part of his informed consent, as many of us probably do, or at least need to do.
Yep.
His goes so far as to say, I might actually Google you and look through your stuff.
Interesting.
And this is a opening at the very beginning of the therapeutic relationship that leaves this open, but also kind of maybe makes the conversation happen as far as this is now a part of your life, a big enough part that it might be worth exploring. I don't know the full rationale behind it or how defensible it is or how he actually does it in person, but I would imagine that if I was going to include that in my own informed consent, that it would be something that I did with the client, that it would happen in session. And I think that this really means that what I'm trying to get to is that there's an intentionality of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that what really separates out unethical dual relationships with ethical dual relationships is that it's considering the impact on the client. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of teenagers who are in my office who are sharing Instagram photos with me of what has happened in the last week or what they're putting out to the world and to their friends. Part of it's as a, how do I get more likes sort of concern, which is a huge, it's a huge thing to a 13-year-old.
It's a big deal.
But they're also bringing to me a part of their life that I get to see what they might not necessarily bring up in session. And it provides really good opportunities for rich clinical content around not only how they're managing real life relationships, but also their online relationships.
I think it's something where I like the intentionality, because I think our clients should be able to keep what they bring into session. They should have control over that. And so, not to disagree with O for Zur, I don't know that I would necessarily say I might Google you. I think I like what you're saying. It's saying, if my client wants me to Google them, if my client wants me to look at their social media and understand something different about them, I want to feel like I can open that space up. But I also do want to give my clients the right to privacy, because they're coming and bringing that stuff in. Now, granted, if it's something that's hit the newsstand, so to speak, in old parlance, or, you know, gone viral, I think it's something where it could be something that is brought up. But I think it's that intentionality and allowing the client to kind of set the tone and to have the conversation. Because I think that's the part where if I'm Googling my clients and we're not talking about it, I think that brings information in that might impact my judgment. And if the client doesn't know, they're, you know, the conversation is inauthentic.
And the minefield that this really is if you're on an intake phone call with somebody and you haven't set the fee yet, don't be Googling what their address might be and what their home value might be as a determinant.
I hadn't even thought about that. That's so awful.
I mean, there is places where this is rife for abuse. If you've agreed to a sliding scale with a client and you come across their Instagram and see that they're on these lavish vacations, okay, you have to manage that. You have to know that there is a place of walking through this.
Yeah, just stop it is basically what I would say.
And I think that, unfortunately, what we're doing to ourselves in order to prevent these situations, rather than you being the professional who deals with your feelings in a healthy way outside of the session that doesn't affect the clients, we're just being told, don't even go online at all. Like, So I don't agree with that. And I think that we really do need to look at how we can and should navigate this world, as opposed to trying to pretend that it doesn't exist at all.
Total agreement. I don't think I could say it better, Kurt.
So we've mentioned a few different resources, a couple of different people that, as best we can, we will include that information in our show notes. You can find those on our website, mtsgpodcast.com. And while you're there, check out our Therapy Reimagined conference that is happening in October of 2018 here in the Los Angeles area. Our platinum sponsor, Simple Practice. And we are also having a call for speakers for people who want to continue to build on our message and share that with our audience at the conference. You can find that on our website as well. And until next time, I'm Kurt Whithelm with Katie Vernoy.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.
Don't forget, we have some special offers from our partner, Simplified SEO Consulting. Get 20% off a DIY SEO course with the code MODERNTHERAPIST, or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off of your onboarding to the Done For You SEO program. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist.
Remember to check out Thriser. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thriser.com/modern therapist and use the promo code modern therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.